Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello there, everybody. It's me, Gary Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like pro wrestling? Well, we like pro wrestling too. This week in the news, Ricochet signs with AEW. In the Lazy River, we preview All In. And this week for Vader Club, Kidman versus Mikey Whipwreck from WCW Uncensored. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. And his guitar. We're going to name the guitar. We're going to have a sidekick.
Oh, hey, Jeffrey. Fancy meeting you here. I was just, strumming a few chords. Thinking about life, and now we're gonna do a podcast about wrestling. Isn't that exciting?
Yes. To kind of repeat my rant from last from Wednesday, I'll do it at the top of the show here. In wrestling, at least, I've always had this notion, and I've brought this up on this show too, is that the big fatal flaw with AEW is that it never gave the fans what it really wanted, and that was Kenny, Hangman, and the Bucks, all babyfaces and all champions at the same time, and the top act, and pushed in a time when WWE was really terrible, 2019. So on the go-home show for All In, we finally get the Bryan Danielson that everybody wanted, I think. This is the guy that we've wanted this whole time, not the guy cosplaying as a Cobra Kai wannabe, not the guy who couldn't decide if he wanted to be face or heel. We got the fiery American Dragon, best effing wrestler in the world, Bryan Danielson. Agree or disagree with that?
Yeah, but this is very emblematic of AEW builds going into pay-per-views, it seems like, where if you just watch the go-home show, you would think that the previous 4 weeks were of the same level of quality, and they're not. They never are. So like, this is a great promo from Danielson. However, the entire build up to that promo was not sufficient enough for me to have money interest in buying to see potentially Bryan Danielson's last match. And that to me seems to be the mistake in the business model, right? Like at the end of the day, we're trying to ask people for $60 for these shows or $50 for these shows. And did we get Bryan Danielson's retirement, potentially his potential final match, to the point where I'm paying money to see it? I don't think we did. And I don't think you can do that in 1 week.
Right. And I think the big, in addition to Danielson, the big issue was the Swerve characterization the entire time. It was one of those things where going back and forth from babyface to heel, and now he's, you know, he's the growling person who's going to do this in front of his family. And you know, it's like, okay, great. But then you have Nana behind him yelling, "Whose house? Swerve's house," the whole time.
I'm very tired of the Swerve act at this point, just because of its inconsistency. And I don't know how to feel about the guy. And I find that exhausting too. It's exhausting trying to process how I'm supposed to feel about Swerve Strickland. And that moves, that needle moves depending on the week at this point.
Okay, we'll get to the all-in preview in a bit, but first in some news, tangential to wrestling, rest in peace Phil Donahue, the preeminent daytime talk show host when I was a kid at the age of 88. Two episodes that I know of that were wrestling related. He did one very early when he was still in Chicago, revolving around the AWA, but mostly about trying to tell housewives how popular this sport of pro wrestling was at a time when it was, in his words, it was more popular than every sport except auto racing and horse racing. And they had a match, they had a ring set up, and they had a pretty decent match for TV, to be honest with you, between Greg Gagne and Adrian Adonis, a very svelte Adrian Adonis at the time, the golden boy Adrian Adonis at the time. And then the more famous of the two episodes he had was with a very last second Vince McMahon, but it was during the Ring Boys scandal, and he had Bruno Sammartino, superstar Billy Graham, and Dave Meltzer in his lovely, lovely mullet. A lot of interesting stories from that show, one being that one of the ring boys in question had made a deal with WWF, and he was in the audience in case his name was ever brought up, sitting next to Linda McMahon to say, no, none of this is true, but it never got around to that, really. Is the name Phil Donahue familiar to you at all?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, back from my radio politic talk show host days myself, I'm of course familiar with Phil Donahue.
Okay.
Phil Donahue did so much quality daytime talk. It's a genre that, like, if you're not into it, you're not into it. I get that. Like,
well, the thing is with him, his version of it was actually highbrow, and it stayed right. Highbrow the whole time, as opposed right. to all the people who were kind of coming for the throne, including Oprah. Like, Oprah didn't get big until she went into new age type of, you know, everybody needs to be happy kind of thing. Because before that, she was kind of also doing, you know, the tabloid TV, you know rape victims, you know, or women raped by their fathers, you know, today on Oprah, kind of a thing. Whereas Donahue was more of an issues type of a guy. He was what I would call, he was trying to do like an almost a news and culture show for society ladies, I would say. I don't know
I mean, there's a great episode of his for those who are interested in politics, philosophy, that sort of thing. Great episode of him debating Ayn Rand.
Yeah, I was going to bring her up. I was going to bring up the couple of Milton Friedman would always just destroy his worldview a lot of times, because the way I describe Donahue, and I mean, he wore his politics on his sleeve, obviously, but he was one of those 1970s progressives who just got up to the line of being an apologist for the Soviet Union, but not quite. I mean, he was one of those people who goes,
he's a staunch Catholic, Jeff.
No, he was, but he was also very good friends with Vladimir Posner, and it was always, hey, these guys are trying something and Reagan's ruining it, you know, that kind of thing. You know, and I'm not denigrating that as an ethos. I'm just explaining this is where his worldview comes from. And it was one of those things where, I mean, he even had Reagan on a couple times, as I recall, before he became president. I think as governor of California, he was on there a couple times, but he would take on all comers. I mean, his first show was with a staunch atheist and who mocked his Catholicism.
Right. Yeah. Right. He wore that on his sleeve too.
Yes, he did.
He's like, to me, like a New Deal liberal informed by like the Catholic faith by deeds sort
I'd go
of
with
political
that too.
Doctrine. Yeah. Like that's, it's a much, I think, easier way of understanding him than the other description.
Well, but, I mean, he did lurch to the left when Reagan got into his presidency and stuff like that. So
yeah,
that
Reagan's kind of a divisive guy to some people.
Some people.
Yeah, I know. No, not everyone loves him, amazingly. I don't know. It's so crazy.
But, you know, I mean, he had episodes on, you know, AIDS. He was really good on being in front of politics, but also culture. Like he had an episode on breakdancing in like 1983. Here's what your kids are going to be doing in the next 4 years. Or if you're an Olympian in Australia, well, last month.
I think there's a really interesting question of ostension when it comes to, was the Australian breakdancing team actually doing breakdancing?
No.
Or was it something akin to that, but something short of breakdancing?
It was one of those things
where
how much can we do to qualify for the Olympics, but we're never gonna win type of a thing. But back to Donahue. He really got eclipsed by, I mean, number one, his brand took a turn for the worst when all the, you know, the Sally Jesse Raphaels and the Maury Povich's and Connie Chung's and all these other like ex-hard news people started to go into the genre. And then they realized, you know, Springer's possibly the most famous of the ones who started off, we're going to talk about the issues. And then all of a sudden it turned into pro wrestling.
Right,
type of crap.
Right. I mean, the genre itself lost credibility.
Yes.
And that hurt Donahue more than anything.
God, the early 90s were full of these shows where it's like, for a younger generation, we're going to talk about the issues you care about. Like Ricky Lake. I forgot, there's the Hispanic dude. I forgot his name. But that also just turned into, you know, strippers today. You're just like, all right, whatever. But that Dave Meltzer episode with sitting next to Vince McMahon and Sam Martino and Billy Graham and Donahue really not, you know, there's that thing where like I call it now the Joe Buck effect. When Joe Buck was doing hard reads for SmackDown, he'd act like it was like somebody was kicking his dog at the time and it was like the worst thing he ever had to do. And it's like, Donahue was never like that, no matter the subject. And I respect the hell out of him for that, because it's like, he could go, oh, you guys are a bunch of fake clowns that go out there and do, but he never, you know, no matter the subject matter, he always treated it with some amount of seriousness and gravitas, which I respect the hell out of, given that everybody wears their viewpoints on their sleeve these days and they can't mask contempt. Donahue could mask contempt fairly well if he had it, because I never noticed it quite a lot.
Yeah, I would say that a vibe that permeates his show, even with people who he knows that he has a, you know, he's going to have points of contention with, is that he seems legitimately curious.
Yes,
when he
that's a good point.
When he asks questions, he really does want to know the answers to them. They are not rhetorical questions, you know, questions, not just like a question that you already know the answer to, or one that you're leaving open. Or I'm talking about a question used to rhetorical effect.
They're not gotcha questions. They're,
no,
hey, explain this.
He's asking a question.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. He's asking like a legitimate question. And that it sometimes can be very interesting and revealing too, how the respondent handles that. Like Ayn Rand, I think, Ayn Rand, you know, the thing that really stuck out to me with that one is she gets really offended just by having even merely stuff questioned. to her, it's all prima facie.
Yeah, this is her, like, in her, like, mid to late 80s, I think, and she's just cranky as hell the whole time, as I recall.
She might be a little younger than that.
She had some, speaking of Reagan, she did not like him either. or kids. Don't ask Ayn Rand about kids. No. Yeah, I have no other thoughts, so I can move on. Ricochet came out through Fightful Select this week, has signed a multi-year deal with AEW, expected to debut at All in the Casino Gauntlet. Terms, of course, not disclosed. A lot of people really, before he even went to WWE, really loved that. I believe he and Will Ospreay had a match in New Japan, or at a New Japan of America show that just brought the house down, or they had a confrontation. Everybody's been looking forward to that. And so that's the big deal now is, oh good, Ospreay and Ricochet can have a banger. I've said before, okay, after that, then what? Because it feels like
that's always the problem with these signings. They've been giving people contracts, no real consideration of what the second step is. And then sometimes limited consideration of what the first step and first utilization of these talents are, which begs the question, why give long-term deals? If I'm AEW, I'm essentially paying for runs right now. I'm talking to somebody. I'm saying, hey, we'll give you a 12-week contract here. We're gonna use you for 12 weeks in a set program. And then if, you know, we have something else for you, we'll resign you. But I'm doing short-term contracts.
See, I would like that in so much as that used to be the territory system way, too. It's like, okay, we have this act. We can't, you know, like an Abdullah the Butcher will wear out his welcome after 12 weeks.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm into that. But they like to lock their guys down so that, you know, other people can't use them.
They don't want to get scooped by the Fed. But I think that that's a silly way of living your entire life. They need to sort of do what needs to be done in select moments.
I totally agree. That would be a much better business system too, because then you're not hanging, then you're not keeping like a lot of, and I don't mean this, see, there's no, I don't want to say it in that way. Then I was gonna say,
you don't want to keep a guy like Lance Archer under endless retainer when you're never even featuring him on Dynamite television.
And the Blade, the same way as what I was saying. Those guys. Right. Let them go make money elsewhere on the indies or in smaller companies, and then bring them back for another run when you need to build somebody up.
Right. They'll be hotter that way, too.
You make them mercenaries, and it's like, oh, there's another job somewhere else. Okay, we send them here. And then when I brought them in, I've paid big money for these guys to take out Will Ospreay or...
And we haven't seen them in the territory for a minute. Like, I don't know. I just think that that's probably better utilization. And it probably helps them command a little bit more money on the open market, too, for indie jobs.
I would agree. Scott D'Amore making some moves for his Maple Leaf Wrestling startup. Mauro Ranallo looking to be back and announcing for them in a limited capacity, I believe. They're also looking at expanding out or looking for talent exchanges with groups in Qatar and Australia. I miss Mauro Ranallo.
I do too.
I liked him in both NXT and the main roster. I could handle his lame hip-hop references from time to time because he made up for it with excitement. Although I will say this, I watched incoming Raw play-by-play guy Joe Tessitore on the call of Georgia Tech versus Florida State today in Dublin.
He's not bad.
When he's excited, he'll be great. If he can learn the moves and learn how to call wrestling, we're going to be absolutely fine. But Mauro back in the wrestling business.
Yeah, I think Mauro's great. And I certainly think that the last 7 to 8 years of commentary quality control and or lack thereof, you got to revise up more of Ranallo's contributions in the middle of the last decade, I think, substantially. He runs circles around the AEW commentary team in terms of engagement with the product. And even if you don't like the hip-hop references, at least the guy's dialed into the show that he's calling. And that's so important to commentary quality control. When the AEW guys aren't focused on what they're talking about on screen, how am I supposed to be focused about it? Mauro Ranallo is hyper-focused. It's like one of the most important things that he's ever seen in the moment. Mm-hmm. And I'd much rather have that and the hyperbole, the Tony Schiavone, this is the greatest night in the history of our sport sort of attitude towards whatever. No moment but the present, like last Tuesday-ism in my commentators. I've never seen a suplex before. I cannot believe this man's off of his feet, rather than, you know, people joking about inside the business crap.
Yeah, I will take somebody having a good time paying attention to the product than somebody having a good time ribbing their fellow commentators the whole time.
It's gotten tedious. There was a time a few years ago, literally 3 years ago, because I was thinking about this. I'm like, I used to find him funny. It was like, yeah, Taz was funny like 3 years ago to me. Now it's grating. I was about to say the bad word, but it's grating. It's bad. Me no likey. It's a no likey good bad.
In a headline written in a way to tweak certain people in my audience, former Cruiserweight Classic competitor Zack Sabre Jr. won the New Japan G1, calling his shot in October. Chris, any thoughts on Zack Sabre Jr. finally bringing it home?
Oh, I loved him in the Cruiserweight Classic.
Oh, yeah. Please don't send any comments because I don't care.
Subscribe to my Spotify.
Yes. The name on that?
Chris Novembrino.
Very original.
Easy to spell, fun to say.
More sanguine news. Rich Swann was arrested in June for aggravated drunkenness this week. He has self-admitted himself into recovery. I am a big Rich Swann fan, and I hope he gets his, this time it works. He's had a couple of issues before in the past. Speaking of which, but not related in a way, Sue Young, his wife, out for a couple of weeks, has a GoFundMe to raise some money. She was doing an indie show, and this dude just threw a chair willy-nilly and cracked her skull. To the point where she broke character. and you watch it and you go, my God, but like she can't take indie bookings because promoters are worried about her health. Big Sue Young fan here too. So if you can give, go find her GoFundMe on her Instagram. But that's going to do it for the news, unless you have any comments on either of those.
No, I really don't. I worry about Rich Swann
self-medicating.
Moving into the Hardy zone.
Yeah, a little bit.
We're edging into the Hardy region.
Although I will say he self-admitted himself into recovery. He wasn't forced into it necessarily, but it might have been a plea deal to get out of the arrest for aggravated drunkenness. But at the same time, as opposed to Jeff Hardy, who says he doesn't have a problem and he can handle it, I don't need this rehab. I have a house show to do. I'm going in there. Yeah. Anyways, the Lazy River of Wrestling Criticism, where we watched whatever comes to mind, starting on the beach of the Lazy River. All In's answer to WrestleMania is tomorrow. A lot of you will be watching this probably when this show comes out. But we're going to preview it nevertheless. As of this moment, there are 10 matches announced for Wembley Stadium. There'll probably be 12 more added on Collision today, because that is what Tony Khan does. But we'll start with the one-and-out show on the pre-show, a mixed tag match between Chris Statlander and Stokely Hathaway taking on Willow Nightingale and Tomohiro Ishii. With the winning team, we'll choose the stipulation of the singles match at All Out between Nightingale and Statlander.
Well, you got to remember, Jeff, that the build for these matches may not be very good, but with 10 matches, that's $6 a build per match. So that just needs to be a $1 quality build per match a week leading in. If you do the math on this.
So you're saying I'm getting my money's worth.
I think there's a way of thinking about it where you could believe that.
Okay.
However, I think that Stokely and Chris Statlander will win this match. and be able to determine the stip. I think that's the whole point. Stokely is going to brag about beating Ishii.
Oh, really? I see some sort of thing where Stokely ends up pinning Willow.
Oh, okay.
Even though I don't know if that's legal in their mixed tag matches there. I don't know. That's going to be very convoluted in a way. But yeah, Statlander and Hathaway, in order to be able to pick the stipulation, are going to beat. Maybe Statlander just powerbombs Ishii. Who knows? To get herself over a little bit. We will see. But yes, you and I agree. The heels win this one. In a four-way London ladder match. Why are London ladders any different than American ladders? That's the question.
For well, the do you have metrics? Any? They're metric.
They're metric. For the AEW World Trios Championship, the patriarchy of Christian Cage, Killswitch Nick Wayne versus the Bang Bang Gang of Juice Robinson, Austin and Colton Gunn versus the House of Black, Malachi Black, Brody King, and Buddy Matthews versus the amalgam of Death Triangle and Black Bull Combat Club, but it's PAC along with Claudio Castagnoli and Wheeler Yuta.
I think the House of Black wins this.
I would have much rather had Top Flight and Leo Rush. They were the ones who were fighting the Blackpool Combat Club PAC combination, but of course PAC was doing that whole I need my Wembley moment thing, so I assume that the Lucha Brothers
said that
this doesn't work for me, brother. Yeah. Although you remember PAC and Blackpool Combat Club were aligned and PAC walked out on them during a Blood and Guts match. So I guess we're not remembering the history there. I am going to go see PAC and Blackpool Combat Club is a good call. I'm not going to say it's not. But there's
and he wanted his Wembley moment, but maybe this gets deferred one more year. Maybe that's like what he thinks is going to be his storyline this next year.
Maybe there's a part of me that just says they're going to give this back to Juice Robinson and the Guns to give them something to do. But let's put it this way. Any team here, I wouldn't mind other than the House of Black. So it's probably going to be the House of Black, who I find absolutely dull. And their house rules stuff is no bueno to me. But
I think it's boring and it's silly. Like, why do they get away with it?
Yeah. But I'm gonna go with Final Answer PAC and Blackpool Combat Club. How about that?
All right.
Three-way tag match. Good Lord, we have a cast of thousands on this one. Three-way tag match for the AEW World Tag Team Championships. The Young Bucks, the champions, Matthew and Nicholas Jackson, taking on FTR, Cash Wheeler and Dax Harwood, taking on the acclaimed Anthony Bowens and Max Caster with Billy Gunn. The build to this one wasn't exactly knocking socks off either, especially given that Bowens and Caster have been acting kind of as jerks the whole time. Who do you got leaving with the tag titles?
I think the Bucks retain. I don't think they're losing the titles yet.
Huh.
The triple threats are sort of made for heels to retain in. General philosophy.
I'm thinking FTR and they send the tag titles over to Collision as kind of a ratings grab type thing. I have no idea if that's true.
You think they're already kind of cutting the cord on the Bucks angle then? Like, we're going to have them drop the belts already?
I don't think there is a Bucks angle. I think the Bucks have decided, there was news, and we didn't talk about it here, that they've signed a contract with a limited appearance clause in there where they're not going to be appearing on TV as much. So I think that's another reason to get the titles off of them. But I don't think there's any end game with this Young Bucks Elite EVP thing. I think it's just going to fizzle out eventually.
Classic angle.
Well, we've had an Anarchy in the Arena. We've had a Blood and Guts match. And the results of that have not affected this angle whatsoever.
At all. I know.
What do you go to? Like,
I don't know.
Shark but this Tank match?
The angle of 24, essentially, is this power grab thing.
Where nobody grabs power and we still have Chris Daniels making decisions out there. Yes, it's all ridiculous. I have no faith that they're going to follow up. I don't think they see any money in this program. And I think it's eventually just going to peter out.
And that's ridiculous because they only need to find $6 out of this money.
In favor of possibly like Hangman versus Okada. I think that's where this is all leading, but that's me. Speaking of which, the Casino Gauntlet match, winner gets an AEW world title match. 21 people have apparently been drawn, but we only know a couple of them. We know that Orange Cassidy is number one. We know player Uno, Evil Uno, is in there because he got that dumb segment. Hangman is in there somewhere. And I think Ricochet is going to debut somewhere in this. Who do you have winning this for the world AEW world title match?
So I've been thinking about this one for a minute. And after looking through the roster, I got to say that it's Serpenico's year.
Actual Serpentico under a mask, not taking off the mask, where he is a very good enhancement talent on Collision. Yeah, I forgot what his name is. But it's great.
This is it. I think this is it.
He's the guy during the Joe match who came off and shrugged as he landed. Love Serpentico. I'm going to go with Hangman here because I think it's the obvious way to get him in that Swerve Danielson, you know, thing where maybe Hangman takes away the title from Danielson to kind of screw Swerve once again.
You mean what if Danielson wins the title because Hangman screws Swerve?
Well, that could happen too,
right? Because he's singularly later. Obsessed with Swerve, and like that could be the way Danielson gets the title. Yeah, Hangman's not a bad pick. I feel like that he does seem like the option. They don't tend to surprise you with this, so I'm gonna go Hangman.
Okay. Other choices I've seen out there. My partner Paul thinks that this is where we would introduce Moxley, and maybe Moxley gets a title shot out of this. I think all 21 eventually end up out there this time. I think it's going to go on that long, possibly. Other surprises.
Thank God for that.
Other surprises, I don't know. You know, your Jeff Cobbs are out there. Maybe Matthew Riddle. I don't know if that would go over that well. Maybe somebody from Rev Pro just for a hometown pop of some kind. But I'm going to go with Hanger. I think that's the way they're going to go with it. And then he'll rub it into Okada, who'll get mad or something like that too. In a last chance match for the FTW Championship, Chris Jericho with Big Bill versus Hook. I actually liked the segment Wednesday, but I liked it mostly because, I don't know, Tom Billington looks like, he looks somewhat like Dynamite Kid before Dynamite Kid found quote-unquote nutrition. I'll put it that way. Watching Bill slam Hook, though, made me happy, and I think Hook is just, Hook's small compared to other, I mean, you watch, I just see Jericho winning this. I don't see Hook getting the title back. Do you?
I don't think so.
If Hook loses, he can never challenge for the title again. So my thinking here is Hook loses, but then screws Jericho out of the next guy he has to face.
Yeah, maybe. I feel bad for Hook because he's yet another casualty of working with Jericho. He feels so much cooler.
Vortex, as they call it.
Yeah, right. Like he jokes about it, but it actually happens every single time. Go and ask Ricky Starks.
Yeah, we don't know. I have no idea what's going on.
Where
with Ricky
is
Starks.
He? Where's Ricky?
The rumor is that he's letting the contract run out so he can go over to NXT and he may be a surprise appearance at a WWE show or something to that effect.
I'll tell you what, that NXT gets Ricky Starks, okay, and he goes in there and has a program with Ethan Page. It's a hot program, and it will make the underutilization of both of those guys seem ridiculous.
I mean, part of me wants Miro to come back in the Casino Gauntlet, but I don't think we're ever going to see Miro again either in AEW, but who knows. Coffin match for the AEW TNT Championship. Jack Perry, your champion, taking on Darby Allin.
I think Jack Perry wins.
I do too. I think Darby doesn't need the AEW TNT Championship match. The problem is he has a world title match later in the year. at some point. I think it's at that New York show. I forget what the name of the show is, but it's sometime in October or something to that effect. And you want to keep Darby Allin hot.
And then I also think Darby uses the coffin thing as an opportunity to repackage himself.
That could be it, too. I wouldn't mind that. Yeah, I think Jack Perry wins this. He'll certainly have a better all-in than last year when he and CM Punk got into a fight, famously. And I think it'll be a decent match. I think Darby Allin throws himself at people unlike anybody else in wrestling. So
yeah, camera coverage will certainly be better than the CM Punk one.
What? They had footage and they played it. The Young Bucks did.
They did. They did.
In a singles match for the rechristened AEW American Championship, the champion MJF versus Will Ospreay.
It's weird. I'm just trying to, I feel like Ospreay wins. I was trying to talk myself into Ospreay coming up short, but I think that they want to give, especially if Darby loses in the coffin match, then you can't have two kind of big high profile losses of baby faces in a row. I'm going to say Ospreay wins.
You have to get rid of this dumbass Tiger Driver 91 story. I mean, Danielson, who hasn't been a ball of fire in any program he's been in, comes to Ospreay and goes, "Do it." And I think they should have actually couched it in, "Will, you'd be doing us all a favor. He's a jerk. Just hit the Tiger Driver 91 on him, please." I've been trying to find a way for MJF to win this because I've been enjoying this American Championship run. And while I liked, like, the promo, I didn't like the first half of the promo. It's one of those weird things where I disagree with a lot of people on the net. They enjoyed the first half and thought it lost its way on the second half. I liked the second half where it became personal and it didn't involve, you know, who thinks you're the best wrestler in the world and who thinks you have great matches and flippy-do guy. It's like, I don't want to hear any of that in a wrestling promo. I want to hear that these two have a personal beef with one another that they're going to end in the match with. So I love the whole thing about, I don't think your wife's next kid is going to be yours either. I thought that was a phenomenal line, to be honest with you. What did you think of that promo? If you remember it, it's been a while.
I remember the second half, like the wife's next kid. I mean, I'll put it this way. It didn't stick with me. So,
okay.
You know, 3 days later, it's not, other than that line. And I think the American Championship has been such an errant decision. It's just, it's out of key. It's not landing with people the way it needs to be landing. I think it could, but not for an audience writ large. It's like you need a really small audience to really get what the American Championship rib is supposed to be.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Speaking of promos that split the audience on Wednesday, Mercedes Moné with Camille versus Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, for the singles match for the AEW TBS Championship. Mercedes plays a phenomenal flake, and she sticks to her character the entire time, and she holds on to it. She is playing Sasha Banks. I get it. My issue was with Britt Baker, because Britt is talking about locker room stuff, and this is my dream match, and, you know, you were one of four, and I'm one of one. Isn't necessarily true, because it's not like the AEW women's division is, you know, anything that people have written home about necessarily.
No, I know, and Chelsea Green would like to have a word.
And to me, it was, I just wanted to see Britt be angry and call Mercedes a clown because of what she's doing. And, you know, kind of really be in the scene there, in the reality of the scene, which is Mercedes and Camille have already jumped her a couple times. She should be mad. She shouldn't be monologuing. She should just be like, I'm going to beat you up. Not this, I used to respect you and now I don't anymore. No, the time for that passed.
Right. I didn't like Baker's promo for slightly different reasons, but along similar lines. Baker, what you said, in the scene, Baker needs to just be calling out what Moné is doing here.
Yes.
Which is, she is hiding behind Camille. And that should drive Moné crazy and get the gears turning in Camille's head. And already that seed should be planted. But it really... you gotta, you know, be touching the hot, you know, the hot button on Moné, which is, if you're so good, why are you hiding behind Camille?
Yes, and within the scene, as opposed to you're only doing this to be the highest paid female wrestler in the world.
Right, right. And this has got to be much more about a title rather than the highest paid wrestler in the world.
Yeah, and the second half just came off as one of those. The way I described it Wednesday was, whenever Triple H would have a big program with somebody and was getting heated, they'd release a lot of the pressure and the heat by having the guy in the feud with Triple H do the "I respect you, Triple H" promo, which just, like, I remember watching Punk do that one. I'm just like, F off. The CM Punk I know would never say "I respect you." He's going to say, "I'm going to kick your teeth down your throat." And just, it always just rubbed me the wrong way every time somebody had to like kiss the ring in the middle of a heated feud with Triple H. This felt like Britt basically having to say, "I respect you, Mercedes, because I grew up watching you." The time for that has passed. This is fight time. Let's get into it. That was my
right.
issue with it.
Absolutely. You know, and again, I think, wouldn't be a more interesting portrayal of Moné if Moné was essentially trying to say she's still the Sasha Banks of 10 years ago, but clearly having to take little shortcuts and stuff to keep
yes.
getting those wins.
That would be great to needle her like that. Just
yeah,
look
yeah.
at you. You're a circus clown pretending you're still great.
And like that is the subtext of her matches too. It's still almost the Sasha Banks match, but with all these little, but with little shortcuts along the way, because she's just a step slower and that sort of thing.
Yeah. That way, there's 10 years since that Bailey,
right?
Mercedes, Brooklyn 2 match, which is still phenomenal. I still can't believe it didn't.
That's
get
just a lot of miles on the wrestling wheels, and so mm-hmm. it would be consistent with the character. It'd be an explanation subtextually for why Moné has Camille around all of a sudden when she's never had a heavy like that, you know, regularly, other than like Tamina back in the day, who is not necessarily a threat to take Sasha Banks' title
no.
in the same way that Camille is.
For the AEW Women's World Championship, Timeless Toni Storm versus the Glamour Mariah May. I want to hear your thoughts on this.
I think Mariah May wins.
I originally thought that, Chris. I thought this was going to be the time to coronate Mariah May.
You think it's mime time, though. You think Toni Storm's winning.
I think Toni Storm has become the people's champion.
Yeah.
And I think the Brits... I'm buying into my partner on Wednesday's theory that originally thought that Mariah May was going to be so over with this crowd that you have to give her the title because people would be booing Toni Storm. I don't think that at all. I don't think people know Mariah May that well. I think Toni Storm is going to be a huge crowd favorite, if especially if that Wednesday show was any indication. And I think she's going to retain. I do. Tony's, I think maybe you get a little.
Going to get the belt back?
Toni has the belt.
Oh, okay.
Mariah May had the Owen title.
Oh, that's right.
I think there could be some chicanery here with Mira Shirakawa, who is in town. She just won, I think, the British Women's title.
Oh, yeah, no, she's the Chekhov's gun in this thing. That promo a couple of weeks ago, I just hope nobody hurts anybody. I think Mina's coming out here and screwing Toni over. I think Tony's the huge favorite, and Mina screws her over, which really solidifies Mariah and Mina as the new heels of the division.
All right, I will go with that. I think that's a good plan. I just would not be shocked if Toni Storm wins this in front of her quote-unquote home country. I think she's Australian, but she recognizes...
She is Australian.
But she recognizes Britain as her home because she'd always worn this... I don't know. It's one of those things, but who knows. Mariah May being crowned here, she kind of needs it a little bit more, and then Toni can get rid of this character and move on to whatever she's going to be next. And then in the main event, title versus career for the AEW World Championship, Swerve Strickland with Prince Nana versus Bryan Danielson.
I got May winning the last match. I'm going to say Danielson wins, but with some... I'm going to say Danielson wins. Swerve's losing.
I think Danielson wins. I think there's a possibility of a Shane McMahon coming out and taking out Prince Nana spot, so that it's fair.
Yeah.
Or he comes out after the match as part of the entourage to congratulate him. I don't know.
Shane as even Danielson's sideman, that, like, you know, it's the match of his life. Shane comes down as the sideman.
I think the AEW fan base would groan about that, though. You know, they don't want him heavily involved in this. Like, you got to get him in and out type of a thing. That's why I thought maybe like one spot where he takes out Nana and then the match moves on type of a thing, as opposed to using your terminology, a Chekhov's gun of will or will not Shane McMahon turn on Bryan Danielson type of a thing.
Yeah, I got you.
They're not going to overbook this, but they're going to have a couple of story spots. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I still think like Hangman costing Swerve the title in Wembley is the way to keep that feud rolling. It's a way of getting the belt off of Swerve that somewhat protects him. It gets the belt on Danielson, which you want to do in his final year here in AEW. And it sets up Swerve and Hangman's next feud, which, you know, they're on a collision course with one another. So, and they don't necessarily need the belt to have that collision course at this point.
The only reason I push back is because Danielson is very, very protective of his legacy. And he's going to want to have the great match with Swerve.
Yeah.
And the clean pin. I don't see Hangman necessarily. You could do something where Hangman
could take out Nana.
That could be it too.
He could be the guy who takes out Nana.
That wouldn't be the worst thing in the world because, of course, he is the heel with the point, you know?
And I guess going into a Hangman Swerve feud, you'd have Swerve again as the babyface.
No, you'd have Swerve as a heel if Hangman took out Nana. Because Nana's the heel in this whole thing. He's looking out for Swerve. They're playing heel in this feud.
Yeah, but Nana's the guy with the fun dance that everyone likes to do.
He throws coffee and then does the dance. Yeah, you're right.
he's the yuck yuck man. He's like the Flavor Flav of Swerve Strickland's act.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah, right. Like, if Hangman clotheslines.
Why is Nana sponsoring water polo all of a sudden?
Right. Popeyes is back, man.
I ran into Hangman Flav once in a Pep Boys where he was wearing a clock around him, but it was a clock of Flavor Flav wearing a clock.
Like, What a guy. No, if Hangman clotheslines Flavor Flav, Chuck D is the babyface.
Oh, okay. See, I just don't think Swerve should ever be the babyface in a Hangman.
He's the home invader, yes. But like I'm aware of this, but then like Hangman's also psychotic now and beating up all of his friends.
But then again, then we have to go into kind of that Kill Bill Volume 1 thing with Vivica Fox, where she's just a mom getting killed by this crazy ninja and kids at home kind of a thing. Yeah, I could see that. I'm thinking Danielson's going to kind of put the kibosh on any overbooking of this match, though. I think it's going to be one of those things where Nana's going to try something, he's going to get foiled, and then somebody's going to come down, either Hangman or Shane, and then it's going to just move on to the match still, where eventually I do not see any scenario in which Swerve, they go home with the blackout moment of people being upset that Bryan Danielson has to retire. I just can't see that.
They didn't build it credibly that Danielson might legitimately be done here. He gave a great promo, but that's not the same thing as making me actually believe that this is the end.
Right.
And if they decide to do a shock end to Danielson's career, that will be idiotic.
That'll do it for All In. You can go on to wherever you want to in the Lazy River next if you have something.
All right. I guess we will talk about Raw and the Terror Twins, if you want. You want to talk about the Terror Twins?
Sure.
They doing much for you?
Because
I don't feel like Priest and Ripley have good chemistry.
I think it's a problem in that it's kind of like... To use a 1976 reference, did you ever see The Wanderers?
No.
Okay. Well, at the end, these gangs that have been fighting with one another join together to fight this super gang called the Ducky Boys. And the Ducky Boys are all 5'6", but there's like 1,000 of them. This is what this feud feels like. It feels like two giants who shouldn't have a problem with all these small dudes hitting them. I agree they don't have the baby face chemistry that they did when they were heels, or even reluctant heels, you know?
Yes, they had much better chemistry a couple of months ago when they were sort of, or even like 6 weeks ago when they were in the Judgment Day still, yes, but kind of on their own little island within the Judgment Day. And now that they're out of the Judgment Day, they're not cool and fun. They don't really quite sell me as platonic friends. I don't want to see them romantically linked.
They're not alphas because like when they were running a crew, they were running a crew and you could tell they were the leaders. Now they're solo and it's kind of like, it's a lot like
when right now they're singularly obsessed, to your point, with smashing their old crewmates. And yes, like to Damian Priest, what is Carlito?
Yeah, it's like there's no real, ooh, I need to get back at Carlito.
Right? Why does he need to get Carlito back? You get the Rhea Ripley, Liv Morgan thing.
Yeah,
sure.
But why would Priest be so singular? I mean, I guess with Finn, there's a reason there because he got screwed in the match. But other than that, I'd be like, all right, this is my opportunity to get the hell away from these dopes.
Yeah. I'm outside of Finn, I don't see why he would view any of them as a particular problem.
Yeah.
Even Dominic, Priest doesn't have a problem with Dominic. Dominic was just, you know, like the idiot member of the Judgment Day, mm-hmm, that he had to, you know, keep the diapers on. But it wasn't like Dominic was this constant thorn in Priest's side or sabotaging him in any meaningful way, nor did he cost him the belt. He's just been involved in a few beatdowns since then. There's like no reason that Ripley and Priest need the Judgment Day, nor do they need to destroy the Judgment Day. If anything, because the Judgment Day's roster is so beneath them, it seems weirdly petty.
Yeah, I would go with that.
Like, we're going to beat you guys up so you can't even hang out anymore.
But they don't even beat them up, really. It's just, I'm going to do my move on you. type of a thing. It's not even like a real beatdown type thing. So you're just kind
of
like,
it's like weird. It's like getting thrown out of a lame group of friends and then going back and beating them up so they all can't hang out together anymore.
That's true. I'm going to head over to NXT real quick. If you had told me 2 years ago that Fallon Henley and JC Jane would be a tag team, I'd be all over that. But I can't stand the name Fatal Influence. It's like a bad straight to video sexual thriller from 1989.
Well, it's just this very lazy ass redux of Toxic Attraction.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And I don't think that doesn't do a whole lot for anybody.
It's like, it's one thing if you become a crew after someone comes up with a gimmick, but now this is like a gimmick now it's a crew in search of a gimmick. And it's like, why don't we just wait a bit before we decide what we want these people to be?
This is also the problem right now on this roster of having Roxanne as the champion is you have way too many heels.
Yes.
On this roster. And they would have something much more to do. Like, JC Jane really should be in a title program for a singles title at this juncture of her development. I think she's sufficiently seasoned already, but she really should be going up against the babyface champion and trying to get the belt before she moves on to the main roster.
Have you read the spoilers for next week?
No.
Okay. I am very excited about something that's going to happen in the women's division next week. Let's put that on Tuesday.
Is Kalani Jordan finally turning heel?
No, but it involves Kalani Jordan.
Okay.
So there's that. It's your turn, sir.
All right. Back to me. I'm trying to think of what's worth talking about on Raw. This was kind of like a just here version of Raw for me.
Yeah. SmackDown was kind of the same way. I watched it this morning, and it's like everybody's red shirts, and they continue to be red shirts other than Cody, KO, and the Bloodline type of a thing. It's like you have your Grayson Waller, A-Town Down thing, and then you have Gargano and Ciampa, who are very good, but they're also just run out there to be geeks all the time.
Okay, here, I'll talk about this. Because Raw, I really, it's just there. Lola Vice, I just want her to be consistently presented at this point. I think we've moved past the pink and turquoise outfit presentation. I think she needs to either be, I guess she could keep going in the J-Lo, cha-cha-cha sort of thing. But I really think, especially after all of the hair up, square up sort of stuff that we've done with her, she needs to be an MMA fighter with a little bit of a fatal charm to her, rather than what we're getting out of her. And I don't like her kind of getting lost in the fray here.
I hate the dancing thing. I really do. I thought the MMA thing was far more interesting. The problem is her toughness has now gone on to the chick with the sword.
Yes. What's her name?
Karate person with the sword.
Petrovich. Petrovich.
Carmen Petrovich. And it's like, can we only have one serious person at a time? Everybody else has to show their entertaining range. You know, it's frustrating to me because I was like, you were starting to sell me on Lola Vice when she was serious and she was an MMA person. I was watching. She has great kicks. And then she started doing that thing with Shayna where she just wanted to dance. And I'm like, nope. And then she continues it. And now the natural evolution of this is more dancing.
Is Kendall Gray finally doing something next week? Is that the spoiler?
No, I don't know. No.
Darn. I was hoping like Kendall Gray just comes out and just attacks Kalani Jordan.
You want the spoiler?
Sure.
Okay, guys, turn this off for 15 seconds if you want to be spoiled by 15 by what happens. Rosemary.
Oh, okay.
Kalani Jordan.
Okay.
In NXT, which I'm a big fan of Rosemary, so.
Okay.
Cool. That ends spoiler time.
Outside of that, Raw was very much just there for me.
Raw was just there. The go homes on Monday. They're gonna raise it up there. SmackDown also just kind of there. No Roman this week because they're concentrating on you know, will Owens turn on? I mean, they had a nice video package of all the people that Kevin Owens has turned on in the past. And is he going to turn on Cody before the match? LA Knight's going to have an open challenge in Berlin. I think that's going to be Cena. Maybe. I don't know. Who would you think it's going to be?
Boy.
It might be where they bring back Giovanni Vinci because they've been running vignettes for him.
That is true, right?
He's doing the Playboy thing again, so you can just beat him there with LA Knight and go, ah, the hell with this.
Yeah, I know. We're back to Vinci is like, yes, the Playboy. I just want him to be presented like Cesaro 2.0. It's not that hard.
Actually, I think it's not going to be him. It's probably going to be because he came back on Raw this week. I think they may just have... I want to call him Axel Dieter, but that's not his name. The other guy in Imperium.
Oh, Ludwig Kaiser.
Ludwig Kaiser.
Yeah.
Against Kaiser's him in Berlin.
Right. He's the perfect guy to go up against LA Knight.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think that's going to be it. Because I can't think of anybody from the region that needs to be on the show.
Right. And it's not going to be like Gunther. Yeah. Right.
Because Gunther's doing Randy Orton.
Right.
Yeah, so I think that's a good call. I have nothing else for the Lazy River, so do you want to go into...
Yeah, okay, a couple more things, I guess, real quickly.
Okay, go ahead.
A Shiny the Adonis' new gimmick is stupid as hell.
Yes.
I mean, a lot of these are going to be, this is dumb, so get ready for this. Lexus King and Eddie Thorpe, the best thing I could say about this gimmick is that it's not on TV anymore, but just every time that comes up, that is dumb. And
it's a shame because Lexus King was shaping up to be an interesting character to me.
Right. They had something interesting with this guy, and then they settled him into 80s butt rocker, and it's not really it's not fun. Like, it's like weird. And also, like, the stuff with Eddie Thorpe has some real undertones that are super uncomfortable.
Paige and Hendry are fun, at least.
Paige and Hendry, fun. I think Hank and Tank are lame. I think that they've been trying with these guys for months now, and it now just kind of reeks of them trying too hard.
They were awesome at first. If you recall those first couple matches, I think before one of them got hurt, they were awesome. And then they decided to start a story with them, and this story has sucked. This story, the thing
it's
that
like
they did
on... It's a
buddy
comedy. It's yes. A buddy comedy that goes nowhere.
I have no interest
in...
And then it ends in one turning on the other, probably, which is stupid also. But, like, the whole thing they were doing with, I think, the Great American Bash, where it was like they were the backstage interviewers, and they're asking Roxanne, hey, can I put... How many, you know, Post-its can I put on my face type of a stuff? I just want them to be... And this is not an apples-to-apples comparison, but I just want them to be Public Enemy. I want them to be... They can be a little dorky, but just have them go out and do, like, hardcore brawls every week. Because they're brawlers. They're good at that.
Yes. High-energy, fast-paced, hardcore brawling. Like,
yes.
Their matches are not meant to be long. They're sprints. They're, like, 5-minute, 7-minute sprints. These guys, their whole style of offense is they're not technically gifted. They just come at you hard.
They're the nasty boys.
Yeah. They
There's
just
a good
come
way
at you
to
hard.
Do it.
Yeah. They their tempo is fast for big dudes, and they hit you with clubber and blows, and that is sort of their oeuvre. Right now, they're kind of doing nothing, and it is like that Seth Rogen buddy comedy sort of vibe thing, and I do not care for it.
I don't like it either. Can I give you an intro to go into your pick for Vader Club?
Absolutely.
So this week, Kidman versus Mikey Whipwreck for the Cruiserweight Championship from WCW Uncensored 1999. This was Chris Novembrino's choice. Chris, the floor is yours.
All right. So this match is at once a fun and entertaining match. I think a few years ahead of its time in terms of work and quality of work. But I also think it's a really interesting story about... like a nice snapshot of where WCW was as a company at this time. And the sort of inward looking, no one can achieve if I can't achieve sort of mentality. So Mikey Whipwreck had been in ECW, had been having good matches, you know, had a decent fan base. I'm not saying Mikey Whipwreck was like the white hot talent of the 90s or anything like that coming into WCW, but he's good. Yeah, he was darn good. There was potential. He just wasn't a promo or anything like that. But Whipwreck gets into WCW and is immediately inserted into the Cruiserweight division, which at this point is being held down by Cruiserweight division staple Billy Kidman, wrestling as Kidman. Kidman had been sort of a prelim wrestler, had had his run with the Flock, and then after his run with the Flock, I think this is kind of a part of the 90s that gets forgotten, Kidman was pretty damn hot. They had homegrown Billy Kidman to be a legitimately popular talent with both the men and the women in the audience. His shooting star press always looked good. He had a lot of cool offense, and he was a fun match. So Whipwreck and Kidman end up going out and having this match, which is a really nice, I think, solid WCW Cruiserweight match. When people look back fondly at the work of WCW, the Cruiserweight stuff is always the gem of the late 90s, and this is right among them. But this match was too good for some of the people in the back, including one wrestling superstar, Virgil, who went and complained to other people that he was associated with that this match was worked too well and was going to make him look bad later in the night when he had to work his match. And so that actually leads to Whipwreck more or less never winning a match again on WCW television during his duration.
He did three pay-per-views, as I recall, and yeah, he was very upset with his push and went back to ECW and then formed the team with Tajiri eventually for that run.
He's good.
Whipwreck is, well, he's better than you think, which is interesting because I was reading his bio, and he's my age, which meant he was a legit 28, 29 when this match happened, or 20, maybe even younger, maybe 27. But I didn't realize he only came into the business in 94, and this is 99. So he has only been in for 5 years. Trained by Cactus Jack. His ECW run coincides with my peak fandom of ECW. And he started out kind of as a mid-card underdog, my mom's gonna kill me type, because there were vignettes with like the Public Enemy where they were training him by especially. He got hot quickly because he was a prelim guy, and then he became a mid-card guy. And then when Steve Austin came into ECW for that run, where he started to take certain parts of his promoing there to become Stone Cold, and also took, I mean, I don't even think he fights anymore. He stole the Sandman's beer drinking thing from him to take to WWE with him. It culminates in Whipwreck. I mean, because he's originally a tag team partner of Cactus Jack, where Raven's coming after both of them. And originally Cactus Jack was going to give Mikey Whipwreck, I think, to Raven. I think that's how it goes. And then eventually they said no, and Raven turned on Cactus Jack, and they became a tag team. And it was kind of like a comedy type tag team. But eventually Whipwreck gets into that three-way dance with Steve Austin and the Sandman for the ECW World title. And he's the first one eliminated, I believe, because they do eliminations in their three-way dances. But he, Austin was very impressed with him. And you don't realize he's only been in the business like 3.5-4 years at that point where he's doing that. I always loved him because a little schlubby, I would say, especially in this 99 era. He's starting to gain a little bit of weight here, but he's still great. I couldn't stand Heenan during this match, Chris, with the whole Mikey Shipwreck
type thing.
And then eventually he wins over Heenan, and that's when Heenan stops the comedy crap, because this is when Heenan is absolutely phoning it in. He so wants to be back in WWF.
Well, and I think like Heenan, you know, Heenan's from a different era, and out comes this guy in a Dragon Nerd Guide t-shirt and
yes,
gym shorts. He doesn't
hockey
look
pants like, and the whole
yeah,
deal. Yeah,
doesn't look like a wrestler. Like you know, he looks like a Dungeons and Dragons nerd who took up wrestling in his backyard, and here he is in the ring. And like that is it's sort of, again, his gimmick. He's like a nerdy, but like Heenan, I don't think really fully got it at first. And then he starts seeing the quality of the work and gets won over, which is actually, I actually like that. I kind of like the Mikey Whipwreck versus Bobby Heenan component of this match too, where Whipwreck wins over Heenan, but unfortunately and ironically loses other people who are relevant.
I like it to the point where, but I think Heenan thought his role in WCW was to be what Taz is in AEW right now. Heelish, but always just cracking the jokes the whole time type of a thing. As opposed to cracking the jokes when it was necessary type of a thing. And he was just overpowering Tony with not getting Whipwrecks. And even Tanay is getting a little bit, you know, annoyed at this.
Yeah. You can hear the agitation of, I mean, look, the problem with Heenan here is he's just doing the same effing joke over and over and over again. You know,
and then eventually he goes, wow, this guy's good. And then it's like the clouds part. And he's actually into this. This crowd loved this match too. This crowd really got into it, which was kind of shy. I agree with it. Mikey Whipwreck, this was his money run and he deserved a lot better. And if that Virgil story is true, I mean, this was also the time period where NWO had the most stroke. Yep. So yeah, it's like if you're not in that clique backstage, you are screwed. And he eventually just kind of got stuck with like the hardcore hacks and things, and you know the old ECW guys that they knew. He'd occasionally do another cruiserweight match here and there, but he wasn't really cruiserweight royalty per se. He was there to take bumps for the most part because they saw him on ECW. And you know, the story of him in ECW is he overdid the bumps to the point where he almost broke his body in half a few times there. And it's one of those things. I mean, he's making money now because he's a trainer for AEW, which is a good thing. I'm so jaundiced about Nitro because they totally ate themselves alive by saying, okay, half the roster can go out there and have absolute bangers and get over, but then you're jobbing to a guy in the NWO.
Right. And
or Goldberg.
These are based this towards the end of the Nitro run. It's like that or 3 minute warning, Chronic or the other.
Chronic.
Chronic. Yeah.
Yeah, Kidman, and Kidman's push got Hogan wanted to work with Kidman, and then it's like, yeah, in the same way that Hogan really didn't want to do the job to Kidman, which would have made Kidman at the time.
Oh my God! If Kidman, the homegrown talent from WCW, was ultimately the guy to beat. Like Sting gives Kidman the rub and Kidman's the guy who beats Hogan. That would have been defining and also would have actually helped make some narrative.
Possibly the best unspoken gimmick that you cannot powerbomb Kidman. I love that whole gimmick. I do. It's something that somebody else should take. It's like, you can't ever do a version of the stunner on me. And so Randy Orton and Kevin Owens and Austin could never get the stunner on. He always reverses it somehow. I'd love that on a wrestler right now.
Yeah, I think Nash is actually someone who forced him to like break that gimmick too, where like he got out of it once and then kicks him and he puts him in the jackknife powerbomb the second time.
Yes, of course, because why would he be able Kevin to kick Nash. Out of my powerbomb? My powerbomb's better.
I'm Kevin Nash, right.
Yeah, type of a thing. Well, I have picked the match I'm going to give Chris for Vader Club next week. Because I want to wax poetic on the team of Pat Tanaka and Paul Diamond. They will not be bad company in this version because I can't find a good enough bad company match to give to Chris. So it'll be the opening match from Royal Rumble 1991, the Orient Express versus the Rockers.
All right.
In what is a really, really great match. And you get shades of bad company. But you don't get full bad company. But you can find plenty of that on YouTube, and I'll talk about that next week. This has been Shake Them Ropes. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes on Twitter. You can follow me at CrapGame13. We are part of Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Chris is only on the gram at DOCTOR_NOV. If you like my audio, you can listen to me on the Fight Game Media Network on the Dynamite Show 20 minutes after Dynamite goes off the air. Paul Fontaine and I go on YouTube Live, drops in your podcatchers the next morning for free. It's under the Fight Game Media Mega RSS feed. Chris teaches music. He tutors children. He's just an overall good soul. What do you want to plug?
Please go to my Spotify, people. Go. Chris Novembrino is my name. I'll search for it on Spotify. Follow me on Instagram if you want guitar lessons and you can learn how to play Bad Company.
No, I don't want to get struck by YouTube. Don't do that. Oh, we'll see you next week.
I thought you were going to end it.
I thought I was going to end it too, but...
Oh, yeah. Is that not the bit? Okay.
I guess so.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.